That's awesome. Merry Christmas. Thanks for being here. So glad you're here at Eastlake Church. We started Eastlake for everyone. So regardless of your background, your religion, wherever you come from, whatever circumstances you find yourself in, this church is for everybody to find and follow Jesus. Everybody's welcome. And so I hope you feel that you're welcome and that you're not judged. A good place to be. Welcome if you're online. Hope you like the service. And if you are, come check us out live. Christmas time is a ton of fun. But it can also be, a time where there's stress. I mean, extra shopping to do and your budget and, lots of food to eat and, our schedules get packed out and you have your family issues. And it can just pile on the stress at Christmas time. It's kind of a time of extremes. I mean, you have an extra amount of fun, but then also an extra amount of stress. And that's our topic this weekend. We're in a Christmas series, and the topic is stress this weekend. You can write your notes. It's the big idea, how to avoid stress. Christmas time. And a lot of how-tos today, and we're going to take a look at the Christmas story and in three different chunks today to try to get some ideas. How can we avoid some of the stress that comes along with Christmas? So if you'll take your notes, how to avoid stress, let me read the first part to you. And Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the time of King Herod. Circle that. Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who was born King of the Jews? We saw a star in the east, and we've come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. When he called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem in Judea," they replied. "For this is what the prophet has written, 'But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people in Israel.'" And so it's during the time of King Herod. Now, here's the backdrop to this whole thing. Jesus is born a king in a country that already has a king. So, that's the stress in this story. That's the background of it. And King Herod, he's known as being a brutal king. History reports he's a brutal king. And by the way, the story that we're reading, this isn't a fairy tale or a work of fiction. It's not a fable. This is real life history here. And lots of people have written about Herod, and they all said the same thing. He was a person that that always solved his problems with anger. So I want to ask the question, do you have any hotheads that you have to deal with this Christmas? We know who they are. People that they just like, you're always, being real careful around them because they're the people that get angry, and then when they get angry, they ruin everything. Hotheads stress everyone out. And everyone in Jerusalem is stressed out because of Herod. They've seen a pattern in his life with Herod. He gets stressed out, and then he gets angry, and then he gets mean. And when King Herod gets mean, people get hurt. So any hotheads you have to deal with at Christmas time? Maybe you've seen that pattern before, and like someone in your family or a friend, someone you work with. Stressed out, angry, mean. Let me give you some ideas. So here's some ways to deal with it. If you have like some friends, you might have to set some boundaries during Christmas. You might have to tell them, say, "Hey, you're like stressed out and you're always getting angry and you're mean." When you set a boundary, it's establishing what I'm responsible for and what they're responsible for. And here's what you're responsible for at Christmas time. You're responsible for who you're going to spend time with. So, you can decide. You can tell somebody, say, I know we were planning on going shopping, but I'm not going to go shopping with you. In fact, I don't even know if I'm inviting you over to the big Christmas party, or we're going to hang out at all. Now, will that upset them and get them angry? Yes. Sure it will. But you got to be careful because you have to decide because you may need to tell someone, a friend or somebody you work with, you got to dial it down a little bit, man, because you're stressing, you get angry, and then you like, "I don't like the way you treat me. You need some help? What can we do?" Because you get to decide who you spend Christmas, because when people get stressed and angry and mean, they're going to stress you out. Now, maybe you've had this happen before where you have a boss, and this time of year, if you're in retail or anything to do with numbers or, there's quotas to hit and your boss is stressing and they start to get angry because like end of the year coming and, they're feeling like there's like pressure on them, and so they're stressing out and they're angry and they're treating people mean, and so you can't just like go up to your boss and say, "Hey, listen, Like, you're angry all the time. You're treating me mean. It's like, that's probably not going to work. But here's something that I've done, like where I work, because that happens. Here's what I've done. And I've seen this, so you go up to your boss and you say, listen, is there anything that I'm doing? Now listen to this, because this is a great how-to. Is there anything I'm doing that's stressing you out? I mean, don't lead with, how come you're so angry all the time? You're mean. No, just go up and just ask that question. Is there anything that I'm doing that's stressing you out? And here's what I've discovered. Oftentimes, my boss will say, oh, no, it's not you. It's just like I got tons of pressure from the hires up, and I'm trying to hit my numbers, and I didn't realize I was coming off so angry, and I don't mean to be a jerk. And here's something I've noticed. They may continue to be a jerk and be angry and stressed out with everybody else, but not with me. Because we've sort of had the conversation. I mean, I've watched them like be in a roar, and then they turn to me, and it's like it comes back in their mind, oh, that's right. I said, and they just treat me different. Here's the point. Be proactive at Christmas time. Decide how you're going to be with people. Because, you know, when you get a leader that's angry and stressed out, it just makes it very difficult for everyone when that occurs. That's one of the reasons at Eastlake Church we have a rule here. Mean people don't get to lead. You can come in here with issues and be hurt and angry and be mean, and that's fine. You can work through all those. But mean people don't get to be in charge of anything. They don't get to lead anything. They're not the boss of anybody. Because what happens if you come from a church background where the leaders are mean, those are stressed out churches where everybody's on edge and walking on eggshells, and they're all really trying to make sure they don't get called into the principal's office, the leader's office, because they know the leader's mean. And so they try to avoid all that, and so mean people at Eastlake Church don't get to lead here. It's part of my job, make sure. Here's another thing to think about when you get around people like that. Don't change who you are. Jot in your notes, I'm not going to walk on eggshells, just on the side in the margin. Because if you start to try to live your life in a way to make sure someone else doesn't get mad, you're going to be stressed out all the time. Because guess what? You can't control them. So don't get codependent. Don't get all caught up in the idea that I'm going to make sure they don't get mad so they don't ruin Christmas and everything. Just be yourself and set some boundaries. Because it's a total drag when the boss gets mean and all that happens, but sometimes it does. And in this story, the Magi, they roll into town. And here's who the Magi are, by the way. They're people that believe in magic. And they're into horoscopes. And it's like sort of what's my sign, and they believe in magic, and they believe in all that kind of stuff. They're people that have left organized religion a long, long time ago. But they still believe that there's something out there, and there's someone out there. They're like someone that believes, but they're not connected to God. Do you know anybody like that? It's like they left the church a long time ago, and they're like, I'm never setting foot in a church again. I'm not going to be involved in religion again. But they still believe, and they may say that they don't, but you like sort of know they do. And so they believe in something. And that's who the Magi are. They believe there's somebody out there, there's something out there. And so they're searching. And they roll into town, and by the way, as an aside, I wanted to say something when it comes to church, because they see this star, and this star starts to lead them. In other words, what the Lord does is he causes like there to be something that attracts them towards God, and that's a beautiful picture of what the church is supposed to be. Every weekend when we get together, what I'm hoping is that the services are designed in a way that would attract somebody towards God. It makes somebody want to follow Jesus or find Jesus. The whole thing is like, how can we attract people towards God? And by the way, the church is not a building. So it may like be weird for you because maybe you grew up or something, and when like someone says, where do you go to church? And you automatically think of a building. That's where I go to church, and church is a building. But church is not a building. Church is the people. So it might even be freaky coming to this building for you. It's like, this is not a church, you know. It doesn't feel like a church. It doesn't act like a church. And crazy, stupid videos, and what are they doing? And it's like, but church is people. It's not a building. It doesn't. Do you know Jesus never even had a building? And the people that started the church, like right after the resurrection, they didn't have a building. I mean, the building came to way, way later. It's the people. So here's what I'm always hoping. When people leave our services, they're like, wow, I can't even believe how they treated me there. I mean, there was not a hint of judgment. And I can't, they said like good morning to me and welcomed me so many times and free coffee. And it's like, it was really warm there and they were already ready for my kids and everything was ready to go. And it's just like, man, what a, like that, those people were really cool. I mean, who would have ever thought they'd be a church? But I'm hoping when people leave, they're talking about all of us. That's why it's important that we're all greeters and we're all warm and we're all friendly, because we're creating the environment of this church every time we're here. However we create it, that's what we get to live in. So I'm hoping people leave and they're not talking about the building. I mean, don't let it freak you out that we're in this building. And then we're going to go to a school eventually because we've been on this ride before and we'll be in the school for a while. And then eventually God will give us property and we'll build a building and that's how it goes at Eastlake and all that will occur. But guess what? It'll never be about that. Because people never leave and go, wow, that building changed my life. Even when we have the building. Do you know if the building is filled with cold, judgmental people, they're not going to last a second, man. They're not going to come back and say, well, those people really suck, but I've just got to get back to that building. It's warm people. And it's very important. And so that's like what we're shooting for, because that attracts people towards God. That's what Eastlake is all about. It's for all the people, your friends, your family, that they're believers, but they're not connected to God. And hopefully when they get around us, they'll say, maybe I can. Maybe I can. You know, in these Magi, they roll into town and they say, I can't even believe, like, back to them, I mean, they say, like, the worst thing they could possibly say. Because they come into town, and the first thing they say is, where's the new king? And, of course, you know, I mean, at Christmas time, often, like, you can say things, make one-liners, say comments that cause lots of stress, things that you didn't mean to say. And, you, like, when's the last time you said something and it just, it turned out to be, like, the wrong thing to say? I worked at Nordstrom's for quite a while, and I was in customer service. So in customer service, I mean, you stand in a little area with a cash register. There's this big, huge line, mostly filled with women with clothes they can't afford. And so here they're coming towards you. And all day long, you know, you get their clothes, you put it down, you take your money, you say goodbye. You get their clothes, you take the money, you say goodbye. And these women, here they come. And then, you know, you like got this banter going with them. You're like, hey, what's up, girl? I like your hair. Whoa, cool necklace, sweet shoes. You know, you're just like talking to them, right? And just like gets like a drone. You're like talking. Well, this one day, I'm like rapping and say, hey, what's up? You know, and this girl comes up and she puts her clothes down and I looked at her and I looked down and I did her clothes and I looked back up and I just looked at her and I said, hey, where's your baby due? I mean, you know, it's a nice icebreaker. And she yelled out like she'd been shot with a gun, my baby! I'm not pregnant! And I had, like, my jaw was so far down and everybody in line had the same expression. I mean, it was totally quiet, and everybody's like the whole universe, and the angels were just like going, what type of idiot would say such a thing? You know, you ever had one of those moments? I mean, you say something, you think it's going to go over just great, and then it's like, oh man, that is like not what I should have said. That's the Magi. You know, they say, well, there's another king in town, and Herod's like, another king in town, and he starts going crazy. You know, and after you do something like that, I don't know how you get out of it, but I normally tell a lie. Which is not good, because that causes more stress. It's like, God, I know, thou shalt lie. That is pretty clear. So I told her a lie. I mean, I don't even know how I thought of it so fast. I am such a fast liar. That's the problem. And so I just told her. I said, oh, girl, I said, I'm so sorry. I said, I thought you were friends with one of my coworkers, and they were talking about somebody who was pregnant, and I thought it was you. It's just like, here's your stuff, get the hell out, you know. And so then you're all stressed because you told a lie and it's not good. And so here's all I'm saying. You're gonna say things this Christmas. People are gonna say things to you, and it's gonna be totally the wrong thing to say. Shouldn't have said it. And that's the Magi. And I want to give you some advice on this, okay? So here's a how-to when it comes to stress at Christmas time. Number one, try not to lie. That's not good. Number two, don't defend yourself, don't explain, don't say anything at all. Shut up. Here's rule number one. When you say something really stupid, shut your yapper. I mean, we always try to get out of it. Just shut up. And because they're going to start going off, you know, and everything. And the only thing, the best thing to do is just stand there and just shake your head like this. And that's the stupidest, dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. And maybe just say it was really dumb. Like this. And don't talk. Because if you talk, you're going to have an octopus argument. You ever had one of those? So here, when's the last time you had like one little thing caused it, and the next thing you know, you got an octopus on you. It's like eight things are going crazy. And by the way, I don't like going over to your parents' house for Christmas. You didn't give me enough money to spend on the kids, and you're always working late, and you know, you suck. And pretty soon there's eight arms going everywhere, and you're like, how in the heck did this get started? Hey, you can have some awesome fights at Christmas. I mean, all of a sudden you got an octopus on your hands, and you got eight things going crazy. You don't know where to start. And here's the thing, just rule number one, shut up. Shut your yapper. Let it will pass. The little octopus only has one arm. It eventually swims away. But man, you get eight arms on you, man. You can't handle that. So be careful. Now the Magi, they don't say a word. And let's see what happens in the story. Look in your notes. What am I following? So here's the second part of the Christmas story. What am I following? And then let's read it. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and make a careful search for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I may go and worship him. After they had heard the king, they went on their way. Circle that. And the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. So here's the thing. The Magi have an agenda, but the king has an agenda too, and the agendas are not the same. And it is very stressful when you have an agenda for your Christmas and somebody else has an agenda for you, and they try to get you to come over to their agenda. Especially when they do it secretly, they're kind of sneaky about it. You have anybody in your family that tries to control everything about Christmas, and they're like, all the events and everything it's going to do, and then they're like sneaky. They just make a little comment. I just want everybody to have a nice Christmas. Translation, we're doing everything my way. You know, they got this agenda, and they try to pull you over onto the agenda. You know, and you'll have to decide at times what your agenda is, and are you going to stay with your agenda? Or are you going to give in? Because sometimes at Christmas, you have to say no, man, or you'll be on someone else's ride. And in the end of it, you'll be angry and stressed out. Unless you say no. Like, turn to the person next to you and just pretend they just asked you for $1,000. Turn to them and say, no. Turn to them. Come on, you got to wake you up a little bit. Turn to them. No. Okay, so check this out. Here's a good example of no right here. An airline stewardess was being harassed, true story, by a slightly drunk man in the first class section who was making passes at her and trying to get her to agree to meet him at his hotel that night. So get the scene. Drunk guy on the airplane. Stewardess, come, I want you to be with me in my hotel room. So here's what's going on. With some difficulty, she got away from him, only to encounter another man at the rear of the plane acting the same way, trying to find out where she was staying and making suggestive proposals to her about the night that they could have. At last, the pilot announced that they were making their final approach for landing. Once again, the guy in the front offered her his key to her. Here's the key to my suite, and he begged her to meet him. To his obvious delight, she smiled at him and accepted his key, placing it squarely in the pocket of her apron. Then she worked her way back towards the end of the rear of the plane. When she got there, she took the key out of her pocket and with a big smile handed it to the other guy and said, now don't be late. That's a creative way of saying no. Here's the deal. Here's my point. Get your point across. Because if you give in during the Christmas season to other people's agenda, hey, listen, these Magi could have given in. There's a lot of pressure and stress. They could have said, whoo, man, this King Herod, man, he looks like he rocked the joint. This guy is angry. Maybe we should just worship him. They've been on a camel for 1,000 miles. And maybe like all the stress, they could have just given in and just said, you know what? Let's just sing that dude a couple songs, you know, give him $5 and we're out. You're doing a lot of planning at Christmas. There's a lot of stuff going on. It takes a whole year for it to get here. Who do you need to say no to? Because they have their own agenda, and it's not yours. That's in this story. They don't say no. And by the way, it's much easier to stay on my agenda when I believe I'm on the same page as God. And a lot of confidence then. I mean, they didn't cook this whole thing up here. They actually believe that they're working the same plan that God's working. They believe they're on the exact same ride. They're on God's plan. When I'm on God's agenda, it's much easier to not be drawn onto someone else's agenda. When I feel like I'm a part of His plan. And I did want to ask you a question today. So do you feel like God is guiding you? Or maybe a better way of saying it, do you feel like you're following God? And you might say, oh, come on, Robin, I'm just visiting today. I'm not even a Christ follower. It's like, well, I mean, no, but it's still a fair question. Because the Magi, they're not religious either. But they believe that God cares enough about them that He would guide them. Don't think that God only loves Christians or that He's only willing to guide people at church. So, I mean, everybody can ask the question, do I feel like I'm following God? Because when I'm following God and then somebody tries to draw me into their plan, it's a lot easier to say, nah, I can see the star. Or you might really say this, and this is honest, just say, I don't know for sure if I'm willing to give up the life I have, calling my own shots, doing my own stuff. I mean, I got some things I know the minute I do it. Do you know what keeps a lot of people away from following Jesus? They, in their mind, have this itemized list of things they'll have to stop immediately. And so they think, well, I can't follow Jesus because the minute I get in the door, He's going to tell me all these different things I have to change. So I'll go out there a little ways. You know, we Eastlake Church, people will come into our services, and oftentimes they're living together, they're not married, and, you know, maybe someone will come up to me and say, do you know they're living together? And I was like, no, but thanks for telling me, you know, next, you know, you have an algebra question for me too? And it's like, yeah, but they're going to church here. That's the goal, you know. And here's the hard thing, is it like people will come to me and say, but is that okay? Well, yeah. Because you can start, Jesus will allow you to start to follow in whatever circumstances you find your life in. And a lot of times people stay away because they're so certain, oh man, I can't start to follow Him, or I can't follow Him again, or I can't follow Him as deep as I want, because He's got like 9 things right away. He's going to tell me that I have to give up and 8 things that I have to do, and I can't handle that pressure. And what I'd like to say is drop your stuff, man. And just decide if you want to follow Him. And then see what He says. You know, He usually picks the things that He's most concerned about, and they always match the deepest part of my heart. And I'm amazed how our lists oftentimes don't match. I've got several things I think God is so concerned about, you know. He's going to tell me I can't smoke a pipe anymore. This is going to suck, and stuff like that. He talks to me about, Robin, I can help you with your lying. Because I don't like to lie. It's embarrassing to go back in the workroom and everybody knows you go to church and like you're supposed to be a pastor and everybody's like, hey, neat lie, right on. It's embarrassing. Or maybe you're like here today, and this is the one a lot of people, they say, I want to be guided by God, I want to follow Him, but I don't know how. I understand. When I first became a Christ follower, it was very, very different. I was in a church that was super, super warm, and I belonged there. But everybody would talk about, well, God's telling me this, and God leading me that way. And I couldn't figure anything out. You know, I'd go in to have a prayer time, and I pray a long, long time. And I really pray a long, long time. And then like 90 seconds later, it's like, wow, I've saved the whole world in my prayer. I don't know what else to say. And, you know, and church was way different, too. And here's what was the most different was the guy and girl stuff. Now, I don't know what kind of background you came from, but I didn't come from a background. I mean, the background I came in, I started noticing the church, nobody's sleeping around, and nobody's like jumping from relationship to relationship, and everybody's talking about getting married. They're saying, oh, we're not going to have sex until we get married because, you know, relationships are built on commitment. I'm like, you're not going to have sex. Well, hold up. Go for the first part again. And it's like, you know, and I'm thinking, I don't understand any of this. It felt so upside down to me. And I started noticing, too, that the things that girls were attracted to, like in the church I was at, were way different. They wanted like a man that was going somewhere in life, and I was feeling like they would like me because my haircut or something. It's like, I'm cute, you know, and they're like, no, I'd really rather have someone that pays the bills, thanks, and knows how to walk with God. And so it was a weird situation for me. And so I started thinking, well, I've got to get a wife here because, well, no sex without a wife, problem. But the other thing was that, you know, I want to have somebody, and let's get rolling in this life. And so, but I didn't know how to do it, and there was this one girl in the church, by the way, this was way before Clarice. This one girl in the church, I thought, well, she'd make a pretty good wife. I didn't even know her. You know, you're just a stupid man. And I'm just like, oh, she'd probably make a really good wife, you know. So I start, you know, throwing my stuff out there, you know, seeing maybe she'd think of this, that, and the other thing. And boy, she saw me coming 10 miles away. She's like, not even a chance, boy. You know, but I'm trying and everything. And I was like, but this isn't fair, God. I want a wife. And so I finally decided, I said, God, I've waited long enough, man. I need to know the answer. Is this girl my wife or not? So here's my big decision I decided to do. Check out this spiritual wisdom. I tell God this. I said, I'm going into my room, my bedroom, and I ain't coming out till I get an answer. Now, God, I'm going in there. You know, so I'm skipping Taco Bell tonight too, man. I'm going in there with no food, and I'm going in there, and so I go in my room, and I start praying, God, God, please, and I'd like her to be my wife, and I'll be a better man, I'll be a good husband. Can I have her, God? Can I have her, God? Can I have her, God? And I start getting hungry, and I want to get out of the room, and when you're hungry and you want to get out of the room, you'll hear anything, and all of a sudden I thought I heard, yes, she's your wife. I'm like, woo, right on, you know. So I run out of there, right to the telephone. I said, hey, girl. I realize I'm so excited. I mean, hi. Hey, I got something I want to tell you. Could we meet? I got something I want to tell you. I could tell by the phone call, she was kind of weirded out already. It's like, well, what is it? Oh, wait, it's a surprise. I'll tell you when I see you. She's like, well, all right, you know. So we agree to meet at the church building. And we get to the church building, and she comes in there, and we sit down. I'm like a little puppy dog, you know. I'm just like ready to pee on myself, and I'm just like, this is exciting, you know. And so I just blurted out to her. I said, well, I prayed like a really super, 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 super long time, like 3 minutes. And guess what? God told me you're going to be my wife. And I was so sure that the chimes were going to go off and angels were going to come all around us. Maybe right then God would allow us to have the marriage, have the honeymoon night right there. And, you know, I was just so sure. And then I saw her face and it was sort of contorted. And have you ever had one of those times where, like, on the front end of your mind, you're all happy and excited and this is going to be great, but there's like something coming from the back of your mind telling you it's not true. There's a train wreck coming. And, you know, and you just like, look at her face. She's not happy. And they just sort of converged when she said to me, well, God didn't tell me that. She sort of backed up as she said it. Am I calling 911? You're wacko, you know. And I said, he didn't? She said, no. And she said, and then she said this. This was a good kick. She said, gently, she said, I don't think we're ever going to be together. And I was like, why do I have to be the cannonball king of the world? You know, you cannonball into the pool, you look down, there's like 4 inches of water. You're like, oh, it's going to hurt. You know, it's just, when you're starting out to be a Christ follower, and you want him to guide you, you're going to make some mistakes. You know, years later, when God finally brought my wife, Clarice, she finally came into the church and everything, I would like to report to you that I was mature and I did it way different, but I didn't. I almost did it exactly the same way again. I was like, you know, God told me I'm going to have a wife, you know, and I rocked back, and like she broke up with me the next day. But God brought her back to her senses. Because what's not to love? Here's all I'm saying. There's a safety net underneath you. Don't be afraid to let God guide you. Don't be afraid to try. You're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna. But don't be afraid to try. To see what could happen for you this Christmas season as you follow. Now, secondly, write in your notes, turn it over on the back here. What am I finding? And when they saw the star, the Magi, and besides the Magi, by the way, they're the ones we usually call the three wise men. The Magi, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with the mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and myrrh. So they like what they find. And here's the thing now at Christmas time. Do you like the results that you're finding based on what you're following? When I was in high school, I had a friend named Primo Benigni. And Primo Benigni, I mean, he was like, I love that guy, and he loved me. I had lots of different friends, but there was nobody like Primo. In fact, if you're wondering, wow, he's saying his name in public, Primo would want me to. This dude was a rock star. I mean, he was a blast. The only reason he went to school was to make it into a party. And then if you ever saw Primo at a party, like a real party, he was so far over the top. And I just loved Primo. I liked hanging out with Primo. Primo had a Chevy Impala lowrider with an 8-track cassette. And it was just, here was the problem though. Primo was a hellraiser. It always included alcohol. It always included cutting school. It always included getting in a fight at a party over nothing. It always included drugs. I mean, when you were following Primo, and here's what I had a hard time being willing to be honest about. I loved following Primo, but I didn't like the end result. The Magi do. They're on God's agenda. And they get to the end and they're overjoyed. You know, it took me a long time to be honest about Primo. It was very difficult to change that relationship because I loved the ride. I hated getting suspended from school. I hated being scared with somebody drunk driving the car. I didn't like seeing my friend get beat up. Never having any money because I was always spending it on drugs, and I didn't like the results of being with Primo, and so I had to make a choice. It can be really stressful when you don't live your life based on results. You live your life based on experience. That's really stressful. Because you have this great experience and then you get to live in the result. And the Magi, they have a result that they like. They're okay with the result. They say that Jesus is worth worshiping. What's the results in your life? Are they stressing you out? And it's because you're not honest about what or who you're following? Listen to this little story, because really what I want to say this Christmas is don't forget Jesus. Don't forget Him. Lots of things to follow, but don't forget Him. And by the way, when you're working through your Christmas, and there's a lot of different things to do, you can get totally stressed out about everything. And one of the things that can be such a problem is you follow and you do and you work and you put a lot of effort. And then when you get done, you go, gosh, man, this isn't even what I wanted. You make gobs and gobs and gobs of Christmas food. You do all the shopping. You try to get your kids the perfect gift. You go to all the Christmas parties. And then when it's all done, you're like, this isn't even what I want. The Magi, they get what they, at the end, and they go, this is what we wanted. Here's an idea, something very, very practical, a how-to at Christmas time. Just pick one thing or a couple things, maybe a few, that you really want in terms of priorities, and do those things and let the other things pass. Now listen, so what I'm saying, at Christmas time, you can involve yourself in everything, and when it's all said and done, you'll go, this isn't what I wanted. Just pick a couple things. In my family, it was the Christmas tree. So every year, we'd go out and pick out the Christmas tree. It was always funny, because we'd go get the Christmas tree, and everybody got a different, like, my year to pick the tree, and they'd pick some tree that everybody else thought was totally weird, but it matched their personality. And then we'd drag the tree home, and fly off the car like 6 times, and finally get it home, you know. And then we'd get it home, and, you know, I'd get it into the Christmas stand, which took about a month, and then I'd finally get that into the house, and then we'd have the big night where it was always the same. Clarice would make the hot chocolate and dessert, and we put on Home Alone. That's our like Christmas movie. And then no sound in Home Alone because, you know, Clarice had to have, you know, Perry Como or some idiot singing Christmas carols. But anyways, that was part of it too. And so Christmas carols are going, you know, White Christmas is going, and, you know, here's the movie over here, and me and the boys, and all the ornaments, the first ornaments I ever got, the very first Christmas, I bought all these wooden ornaments for, who is my wife mad at me now after church? Could you protect me from that comment I made just a few minutes ago? So anyways, it was really super good. It was the best music ever. That was the best part about it, is the music my wife picked out for Christmas. But anyways, these ornaments, and it was always, here was always the same thing. My kids would always do the same gag every year. I had my favorite ornaments. So I'd display them right in the front of the tree, and I'd stand back, and I'd get preoccupied. I'd come back, and they're gone. They stash them underneath or around the back of the tree, and every year, same thing. Ha, 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 big, big thing. But for us, it was our priority, and we let a lot of things pass by. And guess what? I never got to the end of the tree decorating and said, that's not what I wanted. I don't look back and go, what a waste of time. I never wanted to do that. No. Pick your Christmas. Don't try to do it all. Listen, it's not how much you do. It's what you do and who you do it with. That's going to be the key to Christmas. And the Magi, they decide they're going to do it with Jesus. They don't forget him. And look, let me just read you a little story. This is kind of cute. This is the day after Christmas. It was a day after Christmas, and the pastor of a church was looking over in the manger, and he noticed that the baby Jesus was missing from among the figures. He hurried outside and saw Johnny with a red wagon, and in the wagon was the figure of the little infant Jesus. So he walked up to Johnny and said, well, there, young friend, who's your passenger? And Johnny replied, well, that's Jesus. I got him at church. And why did you take him? Asked the pastor. And Johnny said, well, about a week after Christmas, I was just thinking to myself, and last year I didn't know what to do, and so it was things that didn't seem right. And so this year I told Jesus if I got a little red wagon that he would get the very first ride, so I came to give him his ride. Don't forget Jesus. And you might think to yourself, well, what are you supposed to give Jesus? And talk about trying to give the gift to somebody that has everything. Well, how about if you gave him your time? Or here's something he really likes is when we give him our sins. I know that seems odd, but he treasures that because he loves to forgive us. Or maybe you could give him your trust. Maybe this could be the Christmas that you decide I'm following him now to see what I find. I wanted to put a challenge out to you. Here's my Christmas challenge. Would it take, if you take the Christmas challenge, here's what you're saying. To the best of my ability, I'll follow Jesus this Christmas. I might make mistakes and who knows what will happen, but from now until the end of December, here's the challenge. Are you willing to do it? To the best of my ability, I will follow him. That's the Christmas challenge, and see what route he takes you on. Which is the big idea you can write. The bottom line is you can choose another route. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route.